Why do some of the largest food manufacturers in the world trust Aaron Pallett, 88 Benson Street, Fitchburg, with their wares? Because for 43 years, when they've called 800-248-7543, the folks at Aaron Pallett responded with the values that symbolize American small business. Hard work, quality, dependability, service, backed by radio dispatch trucks, and a staff that knows that your business is their business. That's why companies throughout New England and New York rely on Aaron Pallett, and you can too. It's Aaron Pallett, 88 Benson Street, Fitchburg, 800-248-7543. There are many ways that you can be a soldier's angel. You can adopt a soldier, sending letters and care packages to the deployed. You can give to Project Valor IT, buying voice-controlled laptops and systems for the wounded. You can sew or crochet for Operation Top Knot, making items for infants and expectant mothers in military families. There are many ways to be a soldier's angel. Find your way at soldiersangels.org. Do you have a little angel in you? And the tech guy on the radio is on the air. Show number one of the tech guy on the radio is on. This is Pete Eye, the tech guy. We have a great show for you tonight. Our main guest is going to be Robert Stacy McCain. Stacy, you there?
I'm here, Pete. How you doing?
I'm doing great, and we have a special extra guest. We have John Weston from Conservatively Speaking, who's staying over to talk a little bit of voter fraud, or shall we say interesting voter information that happened in the 6th District in Worcester. How you doing, John?
I'm doing great, Peter. Congratulations on your first show. You've been doing a great job during our show and blogging it. And Stacy, how are you? Nice to hear you again.
It's good to hear from you, John.
Now, before we start, I wanted to give a couple of shout-outs to our advertisers. You heard some of our ads just at the start. I'm going to be shouting out to our advertisers for this week, and we'll be giving some shout-outs to some new advertisers who are coming in next week. I want to give a thank you to Aaron Pallett, 88 Benson Street in Fitchburg, which is the choice of some of the largest food manufacturers in the world. They're advertising here in Show 1. Linguini's on 350 Boston Post Road, west in Marlboro. We're going to be going there after the show. You go there, they'll treat you like family. I want to thank The Lonely Conservative, who you'll be hearing later on. She is going to be our guest for Show 2. And Barbara Espinoza, who will be the guest on our New Year's show. The Fitchburg chapter of the Mass Right to Life also advertised. And Romano's Market on 138 Harvard Street, just before this 5th Street Bridge and just after the 5th Street Diner. Another advertiser today. I want to thank all of them. And for Romano's, I want to remind you, you can still order your Thanksgiving turkey or ham from there.
That's a great place to go, Peter. When I worked up in Fitchburg, I used to go there, man. And I'll tell you, the food and the meat is fantastic.
And you've had Romano's, too, is when you were staying over my house during the Scott Brown race.
Oh, yeah. As a matter of fact, when I was blogging about the 5th Street Diner, at theothermccain.com, by the way. I'm just throwing that plug in there. You bought the sausage at Romano's. We had breakfast at the 5th Street Diner. Fitchburg is a lovely town.
Yeah, well, let's tell everybody a little bit about today's show and why there is a tech guy on the radio. We're here to talk about the stories that the bloggers, like Stacy and myself, and like Roxanne, who will be joining us shortly. She got caught in a little bit of traffic. The stories that we bloggers are covering that the mainstream media is either ignoring or very, very lightly covering. And there's just two words that you can say that exemplifies this, and that's Ken Gladney. Now, John, have you ever heard of Ken Gladney?
No.
Now, Stacy, John hasn't heard of Ken Gladney, and he follows the news. But it's not surprising he hasn't heard about Ken Gladney. This was from a year ago. Ken Gladney is a black man in Missouri who was beaten by a white man at a Tea Party event. Now, you would think, Stacy, that a black man being beaten by a white man at a Tea Party event and being sent to the hospital would have made the mainstream media news. Wouldn't you have thought that?
Yeah, you would have thought that, except for the fact that Ken Gladney, the black man who got beaten up, is a Tea Party supporter, and the guy who beat him up is an SEIU union goon.
How about that? What's even more interesting is when Ken Gladney went to the local NAACP about this, They mentioned that he hadn't asked for their help in writing. Now, I'd follow a little bit of history, and maybe it's just me, but I don't remember the NAACP asking the Little Rock Five to submit things in writing or anything like that. Do you recall that, Stacy? I mean, you're a little older than me.
Oh, I think they pretty much get going whenever whenever there's something to be done. But
Pete,
yeah,
it just seems like different rules for different groups, right?
Well, that's basically the thing. If Ken Gladney had been a supporter of the president, and the person doing the beating had been a Tea Party supporter, this would have been the lead news on ABC, NBC, CBS, MSNBC, etc., or as Rush would call it, the mainstream media. But you didn't hear about it. In fact, I ended up tweeting Joe Scarborough about it. He was talking about a Tea Party person who had hit somebody, the stomping incident, I believe, that took place just before the election, and I tweeted him.
In Kentucky,
and I tweeted him. And even that was a little, shall we say, interesting, because someone was rushing at the car, and the people around Rand Paul don't know what's going on. But I mentioned the Gladney thing in a tweet, and he said, "What Gladney thing?" And I tweeted him the links to the story, to Gateway Pundit, who covered it heavily, to myself, who covered it heavily, to Insta Pundit, who covered it heavily. And I was wondering to see if Morning Joe would cover it, and no, it didn't make it. Now, I like Joe Scarborough. He's a nice guy. He's a friendly fella. I mean, we don't agree on a lot of we agree on a lot of fiscal things. We don't agree on Sarah Palin and the war, but the media needs to be called out, and the people who call out the media the best, in my opinion, are bloggers. What do you say to that, Stacey?
Well, yeah, I think the important thing is that there is now, through the internet, through talk radio, alternative media, there are now so many places you can go to get information. And so when people know things that are contrary to what the media is reporting, it undermines the authority of the establishment media. It's one of the big problems in this country is that the people know what's going on in their own communities. You're talking about District 6 there. In that interest, they know what's going on in their own communities, and when the big media comes in to start covering stuff and gets stuff wrong, it happens all the time. If you've ever been any place where you were involved in something that was actually happening, going on, that made the national news, you turn on the national news and you say, that's not right. They spelled the name of the town, they mispronounced names and stuff like that. Little things like that really highlight the difference. And there's all kinds of stuff out there that just never gets covered.
Like Bill Spachman, the murder that wasn't, that you did yeoman work on, Stacey. And I have to admit, looking at the initial reports, the thought that it had been a murder would not have been an unreasonable thought. But you did something that the rest of the media didn't bother to do, Stacey. As I recall, you actually went to the scene of the crime, so to speak.
Yes, that's right. I got in my car and drove to Kentucky. This was the case of a census worker whose body was found duct taped up and hanged in a graveyard in rural Kentucky. And an Associated Press report quoted an unnamed source at the Department of Justice saying that they thought that an anti-government motive was involved. Well, everyone just jumped on this story and said, oh my goodness, a census worker has been lynched. It must be those Tea Party people.
Excitable Andy had a field day with that, as I recall. That,
oh my
a certain
goodness.
Massachusetts blogger who lives at the very tip of the Cape. As I recall.
Yeah, at the tip of the Cape, yes. Well, anyways, but yes, it was one famous headline, infamous by now, was "Send the Body to Glenn Beck," that supposedly Glenn Beck had riled up people into this anti-census worker sentiment, and here was their victim. Well, it turned out the guy had committed suicide and staged it to look like murder, because apparently he wanted to get this extra insurance benefit,
he was able to do this because he knew that the media would play along with him. They would aid and abet him in the fraud.
Michelle Malkin talks about this all the time, by the way. It's a whole genre of things called fake hate crimes. This guy kind of went to the extreme, committing suicide, trying to make it look like murder. But all the time there are people who commit so-called hate crimes against themselves. You know, there's this typical thing that goes on where a student is they're on probation at school, they're about to flunk out, it's finals time, they get under stress, and they often, what you'll have is a student will paint racial slurs on their dorm room door or something like that, and then claim that they're a victim. And, you know, and over and over and over again, over the past few years, it has turned out that the students did this to themselves. And simply because, as you say, they know that people will interpret it a certain way, and especially in the media, and they have it counseling sessions, you know, to help the students.
A lot of mandatory counseling, too.
Oh, yeah. They bring them in there. They bring in the grief counselors. They bring, you know, they start having, you know, lectures on multiculturalism and stuff like that. And then a couple of weeks later, it turns out that the person who gets arrested for this crime is the person who claimed to be a victim. So this narrative of victimhood, that's one of the media templates, and you see it over and over and over again. And once you start to recognize what's going on, it undermines trust in the media, so that people feel that they're being the victim. You know, they turn on the TV and they don't believe what they see, and it's really bad for civil society.
Well, let me tell you, people don't listen to Fox News just because Megyn Kelly's cute, although she is cute.
She is kind of cute.
Now, John, had you heard about the Bill Spackman story?
Actually, I heard very little. I've been so busy for the last, you know, recently and since the election, and I've been just paying attention to a lot of the stuff going on here in Massachusetts, so I have to claim you're going to know way more about this than I do.
Well, so let's talk about something that you know more of than we do. We were
all
going
right
to talk about a couple of elections.
Yes.
We're going to be talking a bit about New York 25 and North Carolina too. But before we get to those elections, since we have you here, John, there was a very interesting election in the 6th District of Worcester. And as we mentioned before on the blog, Pajamas Media had reported on some very interesting events that had happened in Worcester, shall we say. Very interesting events that didn't get picked up by the mainstream media, about people escorting people into voting booths, having pre-marked ballots, and all of some really interesting things going on, especially in some of the bigger cities. But the most interesting race in Massachusetts, which is not yet done, is the 6th Worcester race. Tell us what happened there, John.
Well, actually, let's go back to Worcester for a second. Actually, last week on our show, I did bring in a lawyer. That was Jim Henderson, and Jim was the independent who ran for Secretary of State. And I purposely did this because I wanted him to research the election laws and go over this. And technically, you are allowed to be escorted into the voting booth. Whether you have a walking issue, whether you're hearing impaired, whether you're deaf, or you have, you know, you've got bad arthritis. In fact, somebody is even allowed to fill out the ballot for you if you are not able to do it yourself.
Now, the thing is, though, if you have an audio ballot and if you have a ballot or a machine that speaks Spanish and is in Spanish, bilingual,
right,
why do you need a translator?
That one I can't answer for you.
But anyways, let's talk about the 6th Worcester.
Let's go back to 6th Worcester. Okay.
Now,
as I started to talk about on the last show, basically, if you weren't listening, let's catch you up very quickly. It was held last Thursday. In contrast to what transpired down there, I also went to Spencer later that day. They used the town hall auditorium. They divided it in half. There was a huge amount of space around each table, so it was very easy to keep track of what was going on at each table, so that anybody observing in the public gallery or who was permitted to be in the counting area could easily see what was going on. In contrast, in Southbridge, the room was the downstairs in the basement lunchroom. And I would say that this room would comfortably seat, if you had tables set up, 25 people, 30 people at the most. I counted at one time, because I'm pretty good at doing that, between 80 and 90 people.
80 and 90 people in that
lunchroom. And one time I lost track when I was getting towards 90, and I know there was more than that. in an area that realistically should have had between 41 and 50, depending upon how you actually count who is counsel for a candidate.
And they allowed the people inside? There wasn't any kind of the election controllers didn't do anything?
There was very little controls. It was absolute chaos. I described it in something that I wrote to TNG today as absolute mayhem. There were other state reps, other representatives of other parts of branches of government from other communities not even close to us who were there. And there were even some state aides that were there, which I don't understand why another state reps needed to be there, number one, because they weren't there as counsel and they weren't there as the spotters who watch the recount. And I just certainly don't understand why we would need to bring out aides from Beacon Hill to this event.
Now, I understand that Peter Durant is up by one vote, but there's a vote that's being disputed, and there's something to do with the ballot box. What can you tell us about that ballot box, John?
Well, first of all, there are several, it's in contention right now, but the one ballot that Gary and Gary brought up a little while ago is a military absentee ballot. When I went through the training to work at a polling place and to do a recount, it was explained to us in great detail that if a person did not fill in a straight line or fill in the circle, then depending upon how you voted where, okay, if it was obvious that the intent was there, in other words, not every little minuscule piece of the white was filled in black, if the intent was there. Well, the ballot that's being kicked out as a military ballot, and they're calling it spoiled, and they made a statement that this ballot should have been redone. Well, how do you redo a mail-in ballot when you're in the military? I mean, the guy's probably in Iraq, so that's ridiculous. But the vote happened to be for Baker. I would say that from what I could see, which was very limited, I have to admit, it was probably three-quarters of the way filled in. But the rest of the Republican candidates, which that's how he voted, were filled in perfectly, including in this particular race. I don't understand why at all that ballot is not being counted. But let's go back to the boxes. In this very congested and crowded room, there was they rolled down. We're going to finish after a break?
Yeah, we've got a break coming up. Why don't you finish this first, and then we'll go into
the first
break.
Three boxes came down on the two-wheeler. Precinct 1, they're heavy-duty plastic tubs that I would say you would have to drop from a very high distance with a lot of weight, or really somehow whack it extremely hard with something extremely heavy to get it to break. Because these are supposed to be sealed, boxes that votes are protected in. They have these red wire ties on them that say under federal penalty you can't tamper with them. So this is something that's supposed to act like a mini safe, and these boxes are then supposed to be kept in some kind of a special locked area or a safe. And when this Precinct 1 box arrived on the scene, it was split basically top to bottom. I would say somewhere between 85% and 90% of that distance. And you could, if you wanted to, you could have shoved your hand in there.
Well, Stacy, how does that sound?
That's amazing.
Oh, I'm
amazing.
Not done yet. Stacy, it gets worse.
Well, we're going to have to get worse after this break. We're going to pay a few bills, and we will be back. Why do some of the largest food manufacturers in the world trust Aaron Pallett, 88 Benson Street, Fitchburg, with their wares? Because for 43 years, when they've called 800-248-7543, the folks at Aaron Pallett responded with the values that symbolize American small business. Hard work, quality, dependability, service, backed by radio dispatch trucks and a staff that knows that your business is their business. That's why companies throughout New England and New York rely on Aaron Pallett, and you can too. That's Aaron Pallett, 88 Benson Street, Fitchburg, 800-248-7543. 40 years ago, when abortion was uncommon, 1% of all U.S. births were to unwed mothers. Millions of taxpayer dollars in abortions later, 40% of all U.S. births are to unwed mothers. Well done, Planned Parenthood. Choose life. Paid for by Fitchburg MCFL. Thanksgiving and Christmas are coming. Time to call Romano's Market at 978-342-4927. For nearly 100 years, Mike's family has sold the finest meats, from steaks cut to order to Italian sausage made right at the shop. Don't settle for a frozen bird when you can call 978-342-4927 and get the exact ham, turkey, or specialty meat you need for the holidays or any day.
Paul Romano's Market, 138 Harvard Street, Fitchburg, 978-342-4927. And tell Mike the tech guy sent you.
Men Without Hats for the Axis of Fedora, and the third member of the Axis of Fedora has just walked in the building, Massachusetts blogger Roxanne DeLuca. The beauty of the show is here. And Roxanne, I'm glad to have you on the show.
Thank you, Peter. I'm thrilled that you'd have me.
And we still have Robert Stacey McCain, of course, for the full hour.
You know, Peter, sometimes it's good it's not television, but sometimes it's bad, too.
Yeah, right now, let me tell you, gentlemen, it is bad. But if you can't see us, you can still talk to us. Remember, the phone lines are open. We're going to be talking about a few more subjects. Our number is 508-438-0965. And don't forget that next week we will be back at our normal time of 9 p.m. We're preempted this week for UMass basketball. Also, December 4th and December 11th, we're going to be at 5 p.m., but after that, it'll be 9 p.m. evenings. And before we get back to that subject, I want to give a couple of shout-outs as well. In addition to the advertisers you've heard, we have some new advertisers who are going to come online next week. I want to give a shout-out to Embroid Me on 30 John Fitch Highway at www.embroidme-fitchburg.com. Get your business name out there with Embroid Me. And also J&S Protective Services at 435 Lancaster Street, Leominster, where your security is their business, at www.jsps.us. And they will be advertising starting next week, and we're very grateful to have them on. Well, anyways, John, you were telling us the end of the story about...
No, it was really just the beginning, Pete. Let me go back. We go back now. We wheeled these first three in. And there's the big crack in the precinct number one box. And now we go back for the next two boxes for precinct four and five. And as the policeman sets number four on the floor and picks number five up off of the two-wheeler, we all notice that one of the red ties that says do not remove under penalty of being killed is missing off the box.
I am shocked. In Massachusetts?
Now, it gets worse. The other wire tie on the other side, when, and if anybody knows, if you know, you've some point in time, all of you have played with a wire tie and you either snip it off, or sometimes you think that you're going to be able to stick like a little pair of pliers or a little tweezer or a little screwdriver or a pair of scissors in there, and you're going to push back that little plastic prong because you're going to save it because you didn't want to use it again. Maybe that works, maybe it doesn't. Most cases, what happens is you damage that little plastic prong in there enough that yes, you can slide it on, yes, it might stay up where it's supposed to be, but as the second pressure is put on it, it falls off. Well, that's what we have with the remaining wire tie that was on that box. As soon as the cop touched it, it fell off. And I kind of thought, from all the training that I thought that the that I had, rather, that the procedure should have stopped then, because here are my thoughts before I go and tell you more of the crazy stuff that happened. Number one, it never should have left the polling place that way. The warden should have made sure that that box was sealed and that there was no cracks in it. If it was cracked, I think that sometime during the day they should have gotten another box. The person who transported the box from the polling place to the town hall, if it was me, I know I would have said, hey, what's with the crack in the box? Reported it, had it noted, and let's say, then let's get a couple people in here and let's change the box and get a sealed box. Not to mention that the people in town hall that are supposed to take care of the box probably at some point in time should have said, hey, we got a cracked box here. We've been to tell a few people, make this publicly noted, and let's put this stuff in a new box. Not to mention then that when you wheeled it out in front of all these people, and there were a lot of people with cameras and little movie cameras, that you probably would have wanted it to be in a closed box. And I also, when there's a relationship with one of the candidates to a significant person in town hall, I mean, I would think that you would even there want to be so above board because you know that people are watching. So when I talked about the number of people earlier and the size in this area, I basically did the math according to typically what I was told was supposed to be the correct number of counsel for each candidate. The six people sitting in each table, of which there's five, so there's 30. And when you do the math, there should have been somewhere between 41 and 50 people in that roped-off area that was probably really been more comfortable for about 12 people. Well, there was over 80 in there. Now, obviously, we all know that when you're in a crowd, the best chance that somebody's going to do something sleight of hand, not saying it happened, but saying it could happen, is when the crowd's heavy. So I don't get it. I don't understand why there wasn't better controls. I know that in every other town that there was a recount, and especially where I personally was in Spencer, the second somebody opened or started to talk, the ladies turned around and said, excuse me, you need to be quiet.
Now, I understand that there is one ballot out of that box that is now contested that, if allowed, will turn the race into a tie.
That's right. Not to mention that in box number 5 that was missing the seals, there is now an extra ballot.
How about that? Now, Stacey, have you ever heard of anything like that? I mean, we wouldn't expect Democrats to do anything like that, would we? I mean,
Democrats,
it'd be like,
yes.
You it mean, would be like
mean,
putting, finding
the party
a...
party of sex, crime, and corruption, yes. Yes, I wrote an entire book about the corruption of the Democratic Party, and the corruption of the ballot box has been legendary by Democrats. It's, you know, they want felons to vote, convicted felons to vote. They want, they you know, all kinds of things. And going back...
And what is your book, by the way, so in case people haven't heard of it?
That is Donkey Kong's Sex, Crime, and Corruption in the Democratic Party, co-authored with Lynn Vincent.
And let me shamelessly say it would make a great Christmas gift for the political fan on your gift list.
Yes. Anyways, but yeah, this, John Fund of the Wall Street Journal has written extensively about how elections are being stolen. One of the key things, and this is one of the reasons these recounts that have become so common are part of the problem. One of the things that goes on is that in order to steal an election, okay, if an election's going to be close, you need to know how many votes you've got to have. In other words, you've got to have a count of the vote.
The Lyndon Johnson Senate election, that was actually stolen from him.
You know, you have to know how hard you have to work to steal it.
Right.
How many fake ballots to put in.
In other words, if you don't know how many votes behind you are, and it becomes a game of math. And this is one of the reasons that Illinois is so legendarily corrupt, is because over and over again, you ask any Republican in Illinois, that what happens is that those Cook County precincts, and that's Chicago, those Cook County precincts always report late, okay, so that the downstate vote, which is always, tilted toward the Republicans, if it comes up close, right, okay, you've got, you'll start seeing 80-90% of the precincts reporting the Republican holding a slight lead, and then everybody starts looking toward Cook County, and you always have these precincts that don't report until after midnight, when they know how many votes they've got to steal. And Republicans, in some of the Republican-controlled counties, they've learned to hold back some precincts of their own,
well,
simply
that's...
because to keep the Democrats from figuring out how many votes they need to steal. They recently, Kirk got elected to the Senate out there because it wasn't really that close, but it came up close in the governor's race out there, and the Republican candidate for governor lost by just a few thousand votes, and so, Republicans actually have to win in many of these states. You have to win by a sizable majority, simply because if it's close, the Democrats are perfectly willing to steal it.
Now, speaking of that, let's talk a little bit about. Actually, first, Roxanne, did you see anything interesting on Election Day here in Massachusetts? Since you're a Massachusetts blogger.
No, I didn't. I was in the Marlborough area, and that seemed to be very clean.
Nice to hear about something clean. Did you see anything before that time, or?
I had certainly heard about a lot of shenanigans, a lot of people who came in whose names weren't on the lists, or they'd just kind of look over the list and they'd give the wrong address, and or they'd give an address, then give the wrong name, and say, "Oh no, really, that's my name," and they handed a ballot anyway. I mean, as many of your listeners know, we don't have any show ID to vote provisions in Massachusetts.
And that's something we're trying to change, Pete.
Right.
Because that would be discrimination to require people to show ID. Yeah,
but you don't have to show ID when you register. You don't have to show proof of address when you register. You don't even have to bring in, say, a cable bill or a cell phone statement or a bank statement delivered to your house to say, hey, there is somebody with this name who lives at this address. There's not even the most rudimentary of procedures to ensure that people are not illegally voting.
On the other hand, Massachusetts has beautiful foliage and Linguini's and Romano's Market. So, I mean, we do have our advantages.
You know, in all honesty, Pete, though, very, very seriously, I would say that we do have our areas, obviously, that there are questions about what goes on. But I do have to say that the other towns that were involved ran perfectly, above board, orderly, and they went exactly to the book. And amazingly, Mr. McCain, the count came out the same.
How about that?
Wow. Well, now what? Why was this one district in Worcester? What was the thing that made this so controversial?
That's a good question. I think there's an awful lot of questions that need to be asked about this. It was relayed to me while I was there that there were questions about an election 4 years ago. There has always been questions about that town. It is a very heavy Democratic populated town. And listen, I also, like I said when I started with Gary and Gary's show, I know both these candidates personally. I think they're both good guys. I know them both very well. And I honestly had a very neutral view about this, but I looked at it as a phenomenal opportunity to part of my civic duty that I could go do this to be, and I was going to be, I tell you, I went in with, I was going to be watching for both sides, but you have to be embarrassed. You just have to be embarrassed with everything that happened in that lunchroom in that basement.
But that's just it. If you're not, there's an advantage. If you're the type of person who is not easily embarrassed, and the best thief is the man who is not easily embarrassed.
I guess.
Speaking of not being easily embarrassed, one of our friends, William Jacobson at legalinsurrection.blogspot.com, great blog, you should read it. If you don't read it, shame on you, tells us that things are even more interesting in New York, where you have Democrats pulling whole voting machines out of a trunk in a state Senate race. And by a strange coincidence, there are three seats right now that are in dispute in New York on the state level. And by an odd coincidence, the Democrats need all three of these seats to retain control of the state Senate. And according to, let's read from Legal Insurrection, two new voting machines were located last night in Buffalo, according to Senator-elect Mark Granaeus, a Democratic attorney helping his party efforts in ballot counting. Amazing!
They found three new voting machines.
Voting machines. I mean, it's one thing to find a new ballot, but there was two voting machines. I should correct them, two voting machines. But one of the nice things about this going on in New York on the state level, because the state race is so close, a lot of Democrats are concentrating their interesting events. We're not going to call it fraud. We're just going to say it's interesting on that state race. And so in New York 25, which, Stacey, you and I both visited Anne Marie Burkle. We interviewed her in person. I interviewed her last week as well. She's managing to hold on to her lead, but there was some very interesting thing that happened as the count was beginning, and it was something that I found so, so strange, is that Dan Mofty, the sitting congressman who had won during the Obama election, had actually sent out a memo requesting the media not cover things before the counts in Onondaga County were complete. And by a strange coincidence, since the general elections everywhere else were done, a large quantities of Democratic lawyers, union activists, and the like, all converged on that area, just as Mr. Mafey was saying, that it should not be covered. I mean, that's a strange thing, and even stranger, national reporters didn't bother covering it. I mean, I covered it, and Stacey, you covered this campaign a bit, but for some reason, the mainstream media did not find the Anne Marie Burkle race interesting.
And it is an amazing thing, this Burkle race up here. It was, Pete, let me just say that one of the things that you will notice about the way the media covered the this midterm election is that there was very little attention paid to House campaigns. In other words, all the coverage was on Harry Reid in Nevada and Joe Miller in Alaska and the Senate campaigns, whereas the House campaigns, in over and over and over again, were under the radar. Well, guess what? It appears that if a couple of these leads hold up in New York, it appears that Republicans have won 62, 63, or 64 seats in a gain of 64 seats, which is their largest pickup since 1938. And if these last few hold up, it will be the most seats that Republicans have held in Congress since 1949. 60 years, the most seats that Republicans have held in the House in 60 years, more than they had after the Gingrich Revolution of 1994. This was a world-class shellacking, to borrow Obama's term, and yet you're not seeing a lot about the details of this in the national media.
And even better, Stacey, Sarah Palin endorsed a lot of people on the House level, and a lot of those people won. And she put herself out there. Yet, because Joe Miller did not win in Alaska,
the count is still ongoing, and there's, I think, Joe Miller was allowed today to file suit in state court.
All right, it's looking bad. But let's be fair to Lisa Murkowski. It's looking bad for Joe Miller, and there's no reason to believe that Murkowski did anything underhanded here. I mean, no. She's a long-time incumbent.
Oh yes, but, there is.
Oh, there is. So you're gonna break some news, but
yes,
I want to make this point quickly that the media is describing Sarah Palin as a failure because of Sharon Angle and Christine O'Donnell. Yet all these House races, she gets no credit. But tell us, what's this irregularities? I must admit, I don't know this.
The thing is that just yesterday, Renee Elmers was declared the winner in North Carolina, too. Renee Elmers wasn't backed by the National Republican Congressional Committee, but she did get the endorsement of someone named Sarah Palin, and she was out fundraised 3-1 and still managed to win that thing, and so by 1,500 votes.
Now,
and
I interviewed Renee Elmers. How many times had she ever run for election before? Do you recall?
Never.
What's
She's
her background?
She's a registered nurse. Nurse, just like my wife. And yet, she wins. I would think that would have been a story the media would have wanted to cover, wouldn't you, Stacey?
Yes, just an ordinary American, a nurse, a woman. You know, they're always talking about the importance of women's votes and what women's issues are. And yet this nurse in North Carolina, who'd never run for public office before, defeats a sitting congressman, a guy who tried to beat up these kids with the cameras that met him in Washington. You may remember that scene, Bob Etheridge asking, "Who are you?" grabbing these guys by the neck. Well, anyways, but this is not a story. This isn't someone who's being featured in a nice profile with Katie Couric or someone like that. The mainstream media doesn't want to report about this.
Well, Stacey, you have to know that if it involves conservative women, the mainstream media either hates us or ignores us. They'd like to pretend that we don't exist and to pretend that the only valid voting choice for anyone without a Y chromosome is someone with a D beside their name.
Well, speaking of valid choices, a few of our advertisers made the valid choice to advertise with us, so we're going to take a break, pay a few bills, and we will be right back.
Why do some of the largest food manufacturers in the world trust Aaron Pallett, 88 Benson Street, Fitchburg, with their wares? Because for 43 years, when they've called 800-248-7543, the folks at Aaron Pallett responded with the values that symbolize American small business. Hard work, quality, dependability, service, backed by radio dispatch trucks, and a staff that knows that your business is their business. That's why companies throughout New England and New York rely on Aaron Pallett, and you can too. It's Aaron Pallett, 88 Benson Street, Fitchburg, 800-248-7543. At Linguini's Italian Eatery, 350 Boston Post Road West in Marlborough, Butch Rappucci and family serve the best Italian food in the area. First-rate fettuccine alfredo, the largest serving of chicken parm around, fruity damari, lobster ravioli, and homemade bread, pizza, and calzones with the North End flavor that Butch grew up with. Linguini's lunch specials will fill your stomach without emptying your wallet, and the family will treat you as their own. Don't forget to try my favorite, chicken pizziola. Take a tip from the tech guy and try Linguini's, Route 20 Marlboro, and tell him Pete sent you.
Hi, this is Barbara Espinosa, inviting you to join me on Hair on Fire by Barbara, Mondays at 8 p.m. on KFNX 1100 News Talk Radio, and on American Freedom by Barbara. Please join me for Hair on Fire. You'll be glad you did.
Are your liberal friends driving you nuts? Do you wish the media would report the truth? You're not alone. Visit The Lonely Conservative for news the Obama administration doesn't want you to know. The Lonely Conservative. Observations from a conservative in a blue state where your comments are welcome. Nominated for the best political blog of the year, visit lonelyconservative.com.
News delivered, conversation encouraged. We are News and Talk Radio for Worcester, 830 WCRN.
And we're back, and I want to give a few more shout-outs to some new advertisers before we continue. We're going to be having Little's Floor Covering at 359 Summer Street, Fitchburg. When it comes to floors, you're covered with Little. They'll be here next week. I want to give a special thanks to the Border Grill and Bar at 246 Mill Street, Leominster, right at Whitney Mall for sponsoring Soldiers Angels. The Soldiers Angels ads you're hearing are sponsored by them. And Shop Design Salon, 360 Summer Street, Fitchburg. If you want to look sharp, you want sharp designs. Now, I know Monica does makeup there. Do you think that they'll be able to make me look pretty, or me and Stacy and John? What do you think?
I talked to Monica about that yesterday. She said she's up for the challenge.
Now, that's a that's a challenge and a half.
Maybe we'll get to television yet.
Well, before we get to anything else, Stacy, you had a point you wanted to make, and I'd like you to finish making that point and tell us a little bit about things that were going on in Alaska.
Oh, absolutely. The thing is that these federally funded tribal corporations of some of the Alaska natives had made donations to the Murkowski campaign that would have been that were alleged to be illegal, and there was very little coverage of this. And the Miller campaign was crying bloody murder about it, and nobody would listen. You had the same thing going on in New York 25, a similar thing in New York 25, namely that the local paper in Syracuse was trying to pretend that Anne Marie Burkle didn't exist, and I saw this in other campaigns as well.
Is California 36 as well?
Oh yes, Maddie Fine. They told Maddie Fine in California 36. The newspaper basically told her, said, "Hey, we're not covering you. You're not important. It doesn't matter."
And I want to thank that newspaper in California 36 because they didn't cover her. I think it was the Torrance Breeze. I was able to get an exclusive interview with her and get some great articles of it. So Torrance Daily Breeze, if you want to keep not covering the news, we bloggers will do it for you, I think.
Yeah, and yes, it was, and this was the case in so many of these competitive districts, is that if the media covered them at all, it was merely to repeat the accusations made by the incumbent. I mean, if in so many of these campaigns, what the Democrats did was they basically did an Oppo research dig and talked about the financial backgrounds of the candidates and stuff like that. As you remember, Pete, there was a press conference down there near Syracuse where Anne Marie Burkle was trying to point out that her opponent's claim that she had was delinquent on her taxes was basically false, is that her tenants at a small shopping center she owned as an investment, her tenants had failed to pay, had gotten behind on their rent, and so she had one of these contracts with them where it's the tenant who has to pay the property tax. Well, they had reached an arrangement with the county tax assessor so that while on the record it showed, you know, the property owner is being delinquent, it wasn't actually her fault and it had been taken care of. And yet, Dan Maffei down there in New York 25 was running these ads. So Anne Marie Burkle holds this big press conference and the local media mainly ignored it. They just were not interested in whether or not the Democrats' ads were true.
But by a strange coincidence, there were two bloggers with fedoras there, as I recall, who did report on it. And as the race is going to come down to under 500 votes in the end, I don't know if I have any business taking any credit, but I think the two of us couldn't tip our fedoras to that. But I'd like to
move to... And the Lonely Conservative.
Oh, yes. And she will be our guest next week. A shout-out to the Lonely Conservative. Next week, you will want to listen to hear the Lonely Conservative here as our primary guest. And our second guest is going to be the Science Guy, one of my blog children here at the 50,000-watt WCRN. You can hear us all over. How many states can we be heard in, John? I think, what is it, 12 states?
Oh, I heard at night. Something like 12 states, and we go up into Canada, Iceland, and, you know, we really get out there at night. Let's put it that way.
Yeah, so 50,000 watts of true talk, and just for all of you political consultants out there, we're going to be covering all of New Hampshire with our signal, and there's some sort of a primary coming up next year. But I wanted to get to one other topic that's more recent that the media has been ignoring, and that's the Department of Justice hearings. There were some emails that just came out to corroborate the testimony that the mainstream media ignored the day of Stephen Colbert. You might recall Stephen Colbert was testifying in Congress, and it was the media's story of the day. Everyone covered Colbert. What nobody covered was a person at DOJ corroborating that the Obama administration had, shall we say, a racial test on deciding voter fraud or voter intimidation cases, and we're talking about the Black Panther case. Well, recently, there was some news on that. Emails obtained by Judicial Watch, and I'm quoting a blog here now, strengthened contentions that politics motivated the Obama Justice Department dismissal of a voter intimidation case, despite video of a nightstick-wielding new Black Panther Party member at a Philadelphia voting place. The emails show two political appointees' involvement in a justice decision to dismiss, the watchdog group says, and it notes those emails contradict what Thomas Perez, Assistant Attorney General for the Justice Civil Rights Division, told the U.S. Commission on Civil Rights under oath. And those are big words, under oath.
Ooh.
Now,
yes.
The Civil Rights Commission does do hearings under oath periodically on various bills, for anyone who doesn't know that. Not bills, sorry, but for anything that it chooses to issue a report on. So continue, Peter.
Now, for some reason, InstaPundit managed to cover this. And the mainstream media, for some reason, didn't find it worthy. And I blogged about this on the 16th, and I see I'm missing a link to Glenn, so I owe Glenn an apology there. We'll have to fix that post. But isn't it odd, Stacy, that something like this would be ignored?
Well, it's not odd at all. If it, you know, it's as I say, you know, when you talk about media bias, what you're talking about doing is working the refs, okay? And it's gotten so bad now that the refs aren't merely, you know, aren't merely blowing calls. The refs are on the other team, helping them run their plays. You know, it's become, you know, it's this kind of bias where you have apparent perjury during a congressional hearing, and this is what you're talking about: is that perjury during testimony, sworn testimony before Congress. You know, and suddenly, well, that's not important. Perjury's okay. You know, voter intimidation.
I thought perjury was only okay when it had to do with sex. according
yeah,
to them.
Sodomy and oral office. I mean, oval office sodomy. Oh boy, that was a Freudian slip of the tongue.
Can I finish my sentence, please?
Let me finish. But anyway, yes, the this kind of thing going on. And by the way, this is one of the really beautiful things about this past elections is that now Republicans are going to be chairman in the new Congress, and they'll be able to convene hearings, and they'll be able to subpoena witnesses under oath, and there's going to be a lot of investigating going on because, you know, there are so many stories out there of stuff that's gone on in over the past couple of years, you know, when the Democrats didn't have someone to keep an eye on them doing the oversight function of Congress, as they call it. And there's going to be a lot of testimony. You know, just this past week, you had Charlie Rangel convicted before the Ethics Committee of charges of corruption. And so you're going to see a lot more things like that. Now, of course, you know, the mainstream media, as you say, are going to try to pretend that this is, you know, these charges are just ginned up and stuff like that. That's how they always do it. But you're going to have a lot more news now coming out of Congress as the result of Republicans now being able to call their own hearings and subpoena witnesses in a way that they weren't able to do when the Democrats had the majority.
Stacey, I do have to tell you and Pete something, and I met a number of bloggers over the course of the last 6 months, and I have to compliment all of you, because basically what's happening is all of you are an independent news source that the liberal left has not been able to control and keep under their thumb. And thanks to all of you, there is a lot of things that are getting out, a lot of things are being talked about and explained in great detail that the public would never get the opportunity to even be aware of, let alone get in-depth information on it. So, you know, folks, if you're listening out there, please listen to all these people and sign on to some of these blogs, because you're going to find out information that is going to blow your mind. And it's, in many cases, information that the powers that be, let's say, don't want anybody to know.
On the subject of the U.S. Commission on Civil Rights, Department of Justice, et cetera, and elections and why they matter, I think what we're seeing with the DOJ is that when you have a corrupt president put in power, he's then the person who is able to hire, fire DOJ attorneys at will and thus set the agenda of what is considered justice in our country. It's also the person who, you know, obviously appoint Supreme Court justices who are then able to decide whether or not it's constitutional to do things like show ID to vote. And then there are also the people, by the way, who drive some of the agenda, even of allegedly nonpartisan civil rights commissions or think tanks like the U.S. Commission on Civil Rights. And the reason that the Civil Rights Commission even started investigating this is because with 8 years of the Bush administration and then a heavy Republican influence in Congress during that time, they were able to put enough libertarians in there whose, you know, conservative libertarian types, whose goal is actually advocating for civil rights and justice, not driving a progressive agenda. And that's the only reason we have this now.
Okay, we're getting near the end of the day, so I want to close with the following. I'd like all of us to go around, and I'm going to exclude you from this, John, since you're the only non-blogger who'll be on this set for a while. I'd like everybody to talk about one story that the listeners will not be hearing about or may not have heard about if they were listening to the mainstream media, but would hear about if you were talking to bloggers. And mine is from Israeli Cool, Israely Cool. It's an Australian blogger who lives in Israel, and it's an interesting mosque story. We've heard about the mosque in New York City and inappropriate mosques. Well, here's an even better one. And this story is from Israeli Cool from about 2 weeks ago. A number of days ago, UNESCO classified the Jewish holy site, Rachel's Tomb, as a mosque. Israel has reacted to the appalling decision by refusing to cooperate with them. Israel on Wednesday said it would reduce cooperation with the United Nations Cultural Watchdog after the body classified Rachel's Tomb in the West Bank as a mosque. This is from November 6th. And I'll wager that none of you heard about that or of Mr. Abbas saying he's welcome to foreign peacekeepers as long as none of them are Jewish. Roxanne, do you have anything for us along those lines? A story that they might not have heard in the media? Or Stacy?
Well, I hope that the people in Massachusetts have heard about the TSA agent at Logan Airport who has been arrested on charges of raping a 14-year-old girl.
I hadn't heard it.
I had heard that.
No, I had, but I think it was from a blog.
Yeah, right. I mean, here you have the people who are, you know, supposed to be doing these pat downs on people of all ages, and one of them's arrested for raping a 14-year-old girl.
Unfortunately, we are out of time. So, Roxanne, since you were late today, you don't get to say one. But will you think you'll come back later and come on another show later on?
Maybe.
And remember, next week we have the Lonely Conservative and the Science Guy. This is the Tech Guy on the radio. Thank you very much for listening. And we are off the air.
Why do some of the largest food manufacturers in the world trust Aaron Pallett, 88 Benson Street, Fitchburg, with their wares? Because for 43 years, when they've called 800-248-7543, the folks at Aaron Pallett responded with the values that symbolize American small business. Hard work, quality, dependability, service, backed by radio dispatch trucks and a staff that knows that your business is their business. That's why companies throughout New England and New York rely on Aaron Pallett, and you can too. It's Aaron Pallett, 88 Benson Street, Fitchburg, 800-248-7543.
True Talk 830 WCRN.
There are many ways that you can be a soldier's angel. You can bake. Our angel bakers bake homemade treats for the deployed. You can write. Our wounded TLC team sends out cards and letters of support to the wounded. You can knit. Our sewing team makes blankets and scarves for the deployed. There are many ways to be a soldier's angel. Find your way at soldiersangels.org. Do you have a little angel in you?